This morning's scripture reading will be coming from the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Again, it's 2 Corinthians, chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart, but we have renounced disgraceful, underhanded ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word, but by the open statement of the truth, we would commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is in the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ.
Good morning. How's everybody doing? Are we excited to be here? I am. I was kind of sitting there, and I was like, man, I'm really excited to be here today. I don't really know why it's any difference. It's Sunday, but I'm excited to be here today. Before we get started, Michael came over and reminded me that this Friday night is movie night. You leave 6:45, I believe it's part 2 of the Ten Commandments. So if you want to go watch Charlton Heston walk through the Red Sea, then you got that. That's going to be at Michael and Montel's house next door. Oh, that's true. Today is Eddie and Hannah's first wedding anniversary. So made it a year. So very good, right? So thankful to God for that. Thankful for Eddie and Hannah. So that's almost the opportunity of a lifetime to get married in a sense. But I want to start off by asking a question. What to you would be the opportunity of a lifetime? Like, I think about it, some of the things that's happened in my life, and while I was in college especially, I was a huge music fan. But something that has stuck with me even since I got out of college is how much I love sports. And we have a tradition where I went to college. They have this thing called Tiger Walk. And it's before every football game, all these fans, they come out and they line up, and the football team will walk from the bus through the crowds of people into the stadium. And I remember the first time I got to go to one. I wasn't a student yet, but I got to go. And I remember seeing the head coach walk by. And you see him on TV every week, and you're like, oh, I finally get to see him. But you know what? He didn't recognize me out of the crowd. He didn't know me from Adam. He didn't know anything about me. But yeah, I felt so big because I was right there. And sometimes you shout, I'm like, hey, let me in. And of course, you know what they don't do? They don't let you into the locker room, which stinks, but you understand why they do it. There was a guy who had the opportunity of a lifetime. He heard a crowd coming, and this guy can't see a thing. Now, I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 20. This story, this event, is recorded in Matthew 20, Mark 10, and also in the book of Luke. We're going to mainly be looking at Matthew's account this morning in Matthew chapter 20. There's a man sitting on the road in Jericho. He's sitting down, and I want you just to pick up in our text. Verse 29 of Matthew chapter 20. And you remember Jericho? It's the first city that the Israelites take when they cross the Jordan River to take the land of Canaan with Joshua. It's a big city. Remember, it had all these fortified walls, and the walls collapsed. Some of the reading that I read said Jericho was probably one of the biggest cities at the time, probably about the second biggest city outside of Jerusalem. Big city, a lot of people. So verse 29. As they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed him. Now we know the him being Jesus. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." And
The crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent. But they cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." And stopping, Jesus called them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Let our eyes be opened." And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes, and immediately they recovered their sight and followed him. You know what the opportunity of a lifetime was that day? Jesus asked them the question, "What do you want me to do for you?" What an honor. There is all of this crowd of people following him. Jesus picks them out of the crowd. I want us to see a couple of things about these men. Go back. Look in your text there. We know one of these blind men's name based on the account in Mark chapter 10, where we find out this man's name is Bartimaeus in Mark chapter 10 verse 46. Now, you might recognize that phrase, B-A-R, those letters B-A-R, in someone else's name. Barnabas, meaning son of encouragement. Well, many people think that Bartimaeus was the son of Timaeus. So I'm putting him up there as son of Timaeus, and you're going to see why here in just a moment. The son of Timaeus, Bartimaeus, and another blind man is with him. Mark only records Bartimaeus. Mark doesn't tell us about the other man. And some people have used this particular passage as a passage of the Bible to say, oh, the Bible's not true. Because one of the Gospels has him coming into Jericho. Another of the Gospels has him leaving Jericho. Matthew just has him while they're in Jericho. So there's a lot of differences, apparently, about the story, but there's not. What each of them is saying is very specific to their message. What they wanted to do. Mark was telling us about Bartimaeus, about just one of the blind men. The rest are telling us that there were two blind men. And so we're going to go with that, that there were two blind men, as Matthew tells us, but Mark singles out one, Bartimaeus. I want us just to sit here and I want us to think about this. Where were they sitting? Where do blind people normally sit? You think about the guy in Acts chapter 3, he's a lame and he's a beggar. They sit where? In a nice chair, got him a lawn chair pulled out. They sit on the ground. Notice where this fellow was. Third, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. You may also know something about the roadside of Jericho. In Luke chapter 10, it's on this road that Jesus tells about the man who is beat as he's going along the road. And robbers come and they take him. And remember, a priest passes by and a priest doesn't help him. And a Levite passes by and a Levite doesn't help him. But the good Samaritan does. This roadside of Jericho apparently is a very dangerous road from all readings that I've done. And these men are sitting along the side of this road. They hear this crowd coming. And do they know what it is? Yes, I believe so. They said, "Who's coming?" And they're crying out as Jesus was passing by, "Lord, have mercy on us." You know what blind people usually got? Ignored. You know what lame people usually got? Ignored. You know what these people got? They got worse than being ignored. You know what? As they are kneeling, they are told to be quiet. Look at verse 31. The crowd rebuked them, telling them, "Be silent." But that did not stop them. They cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us." And notice our second phrase, "Son of David." You know what these blind men recognized, even though they couldn't see with their eyes? You know what they knew about Jesus? He was the Messiah. That's what you often read when you read the Son of David. He was the one who was going to sit on the king's throne forever. These men, though they couldn't see, And I bet they didn't have Braille Bibles as well. They knew that Jesus was the Christ, Son of God. They knew that. And so even when someone tells them to be quiet, they say, no, have mercy on us. What would you have done if you were Jesus? They told you to be quiet. Please be quiet. Not what Jesus does. We'll keep reading our text there. So go to verse 32. And stop. Jesus kind of stops in his tracks. Wouldn't that be a cool thing? You're going along and you're crying out for Jesus and you're crying out, and all of a sudden he just stops. Whoa. He's going to act. He's going to talk to me. He stops. And notice what it says. He called them. He called them to him. How's a blind man going to know where to go? Mark's account tells us that they brought him. They brought them to him. They had to have help to get to Jesus. But they brought him to him. And I want us to see, go to Mark 10. Hold your finger here in Matthew 20. I want us to see this detail in Mark 10. I don't want to forget this detail. And again, remember in our text in Mark, we're only talking about Bartimaeus. But the principle is still the same. 10:49. And Jesus stopped and said, call him. And they called the blind man to him, and they said, take heart, get up, he's calling you. And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. There was no slowness in this response. He sprang up and tossed off his outer coat, the coat that would be on the outside. He would have had something on underneath, but he would have tossed it off to the side to get there as fast as he could. He wanted nothing impeding him. And that reminds me of what is said in Hebrews chapter 12, where we are to lay aside every weight of sin that so easily entangles us. When we come to Jesus, it's time to throw it all off to the side. He recognizes that. I don't need anything in my way. He wants me to come to Him, so I'm coming to Him as fast as I can. So go back to Matthew 20. And that is when we get our precious words. What do you want me to do for you? It's like you get up in this big hurry. Okay, so what do you want? You've been asking for mercy. What do you want? You ever met somebody famous? Somebody that you wanted to see? And you kind of go gun-shy with your tongue? You're like, You can't get it out, right? You just can't get it out. I want you. Lord, let me recover my sight. Or verse 33 as it says, Lord, let our eyes be opened. It's a simple request. Lord, let our eyes be open. And as Jesus will say in Luke chapter 4, I've been sent to open the eyes of the blind. Can He do this? Absolutely. Jesus can perform this request and He grants it. So 34, Jesus in pity touched their eyes. And immediately they recovered their sight and followed. Jesus feels sorrowful, pity for these men. He says, I'll make it better. And they didn't just say like the lepers. You remember the lepers who were cleansed? There were 10 of them who were cleansed by Jesus. And 9 of them went their merry way, and only one came back to return and say thank you. These men get up and they follow. They join in the crowd that's following Him and they go. And Jesus did this. That's pretty awesome, isn't it? And you ever notice that I've wanted some things? What do you want? Do you realize that you were blind at one time? Or you may still be blind? You've got eyes. Most of us in here can do it. We've got a couple who don't see as well. She can't see. We take that for granted, don't we? I think about how amazing it is, Dolores. She walks in the door, she puts her hand on the back pew, and she knows exactly where her pew is. I don't have a clue where my pew is except for on Sunday morning when I'm sitting on the front row. I can't find it. Dolores finds it every time perfectly. I take it for granted that I can see it. But when we're blind is when we are spiritually blind. And there was a time in our life when we were blind and we needed sight. You know who came to give us that sight? Jesus. Look at John chapter 9 and verse 39. Remember in John chapter 9, this is a chapter that's all about a man born blind. He was blind from his birth, and he is there at the temple. And remember, it's the time when his disciples, when Jesus' disciples say, "Who sinned? This man or his father?" Thinking that his blindness was some kind of curse upon him. He said, "No, so that you will see that the works of God may be glorified." Remember, Jesus, he heals this man, right? And there's a huge stir, there's a huge stink with the leaders of the people. And they call this guy in. He said, "Okay, who? Were you blind?" "Yeah." "Who healed you?" "Well, I don't know, some guy. He spat on my eyes." And they call him in, call his parents in. And his parents say, "He's of age. Ask him." And it was at that point that they really believed that he had been blind. But yet they didn't want to believe. Yet they didn't do anything about it. So he calls him in a second time. And he says, "I already told you." He says, "Do you want to become one of his disciples as well?" He said, "You were born in utter sin, and you would teach us." Jesus gives a very interesting discourse right after that. Start with me, actually, in verse 35. Jesus heard that they cast him out. They had cast him out of the synagogue. It basically said, "Your Jewish rites are done. Get on out of here." And he found him. Jesus found him. He said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he answered, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe in?" He doesn't know who he is. He's like, "Who is he? I'll believe in him." And Jesus said to him, 37, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped. Now here's where Jesus' interesting statement. "For judgment I came into this world, that for those who do not see, may see. And for those who see, may be blind." Jesus came to give sight to those who couldn't see. And he's not talking about just the blind physically. He's talking about those who do not see, who don't understand. He came to give them sight. And to those who thought that they understood, to blind them, to harden their hearts. You remember the prophecy in Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6. He will blind their eyes and harden their hearts and dull their ears, so that lest they see, they turn to it. God does that. And that seems kind of foreign for us to kind of come to grips with. But God gives sight to those who can't see. And that's where our passage that Justin read for us a moment ago comes into play. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. This conversation starts up in chapter 3, and we'll go up there in just 1 second. But 2 Corinthians chapter 4, there's a very interesting statement that's made. Verse 4. Actually, let's start at verse 3. "And even if our gospel is veiled," Paul's saying, okay, the gospel that we're preaching, even if it is veiled, even if it is hidden, who is it hidden to? To those who are perishing. "In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God." The God of this world, who would the God of this world be? It's pretty simple, doesn't it? Satan, the prince of the power of the air in Ephesians chapter 2. And he is the ruler of principalities and darkness and evil places in Ephesians chapter 6. Satan, how is Satan blind to the hearts of the unbelievers? You don't want to see. You don't want to come to the light. Because the light exposes the things that are wrong. And so, Satan, what he's done is he's made us to kind of feel comfortable in what it is. Where we put something over so that we hide ourselves. We're hidden. It's our heart that we've hidden. We blinded ourselves by Satan to the point where I don't see what the light of the gospel is. I don't see what it is that the Lord wants me to do. I've been blinded. Wasn't there a point in all of our lives where we were blinded? You know, but you say, man, I grew up in the church. Oh, you didn't you? What about when you sinned and you realized that you were in sin? Were you still right before the Lord? No, you weren't, right? But we sometimes comfort ourselves that we say, man, I come to church every Sunday. And man, my parents are Christians and my families are Christians. And my husband's a Christian and all this good stuff. But what we don't see is that I'm lost. That's because Satan is blinding us. Satan doesn't want us to see the light of the gospel. He doesn't want us to come to the light. You know how you get your sight? Look at chapter 3. Because God and Jesus give sight. You know how you get that sight? And this is pulling back in chapter 3 of when Moses was at Mount Sinai. He went up on the mountain. You remember he got the law from God. And he came down and his face was shining so bright. The people said, you got to do something about that. So they put a veil over his face. And they're going to use this illustration here with the Israelites in verse 13. It's not like Moses who put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not gaze at the outcome of what was being brought to an end. So just like Moses putting on this veil, this is what Israel has done. He's going to explain it in verse 14. But their minds were hardened, for to this day, when they read the old covenant, that the same veil remains unlifted, because only through Christ is it taken away. You know what the Jews did every week? Every Sabbath? They went to the synagogue. You know what they did every Sabbath in the synagogue? They read the Scriptures. They read the Old Covenant. They read the Old Testament, as we would call it. You know what happened with many of the Jews when they heard about Jesus? They rejected him. No, we're still looking for Messiah. That's not the Messiah. The Messiah, he'll come from Bethlehem. Their heart was veiled. There's a veil over their heart. And it's only removed when you come to Christ, when you see Christ, the light of the gospel. There's no other way of getting around it. He is. He'll say in John chapter 5, if you believe Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote of me. But yet their eyes are closed and their eyes are shut. Don't let that be us. Don't let that be you. If you're sitting in darkness, come to the Lord so that as you can see, notice this awesome phrase at the end of verse 18. So not only is the veil removed, but verse 18 of chapter 3, we all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Not only is the veil removed, you get to see the glory of the Lord and become more and more and more like Him. We've been blind, but thankfully, we can see. The light has shone in our hearts, as verse 6 of chapter 4 says. But that only comes when you turn to Christ. I'll be honest with you. That was the point of my thinking when I started the sermon. That's what I want to talk about. Right? That's how I got all this preparation. I was thinking, you know what? I need to see what's around our story back in Matthew chapter 20. You remember our opening slide? What was our theme of the lesson? The opportunity of a lifetime. What do you want me to do for you? Go back to Matthew chapter 20. I want you to see something that I've never noticed before. I may have noticed it, but it never hit me like this before. As I was going through, you know what? There's another set of sons who get to see Jesus. We get a story about the sons of Zebedee with their mother coming to Jesus. Now we know the sons of Zebedee from Mark chapter 10. He calls them James and John, the apostles of Jesus. Two of the three closest to Jesus. Remember, Peter, James, and John would have been his very closest disciples. Jesus, this is before they get to Jericho, they're walking on the road on the way to Jerusalem. And notice the similarities here. Start with me in verse 20 of Matthew chapter 20. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons. And kneeling before him, she asked him for something. Let's see our closest right away. Where does she fall? She kneels before him. And what does she do? She asks him for something. Keep reading with me in verse 21. And he said to her, what do you want? It's basically the same question. What do you want from me? What do you want? And you would think the apostles, right? They're going to ask for this really great thing. In Mark's account, it has the apostles asking this. It has James and John asking this. In Matthew's account, it has the mother. I think it's the same thing. They're all coming, all three together, and they're one apart. That's what they ask. Say that these two sons of mine are to sit one at your right hand and one on your left hand in your kingdom. What? That's the question you're going to ask Jesus? Let my boys, one sit on your right hand and one sit on your left hand. And we know Jesus' answer, don't we? You do not know what you're asking, verse 22. And are you able to drink that cup that I am to drink? They said, we're able. I can just sit here and say, yeah, we can do it. We're with you, Jesus. He said to them, verse 23, you will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant. But it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father. What do you think the response? Remember what the response is of the ten who are walking with him? Notice our next verse. Notice verse 24. And when they heard it, they were indignant at the brothers. Just as the crowd had rebuked them, Lord have mercy, they're indignant at them. And we know that they've been having this battle, who's the greatest, who's the greatest, who's the greatest. And they will continue to have the battle, who's the greatest, who's the greatest, who's the greatest. The ten are indignant about it. But notice what Jesus did in verse 25. But Jesus called them to him. Just as he called the two blind men, he calls these men. And he called them to him and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them. And their great ones exercise authority over them. And it shall not be so among you. But whosoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. That's what he told them. He called them to him and said, you've got to serve. You'll be a servant. What's the difference in this instance? The blind men are granted their sight. But you know what? Jesus couldn't grant this request. He says, I cannot. The Father has prepared the ones whom will get this. The there's only so much Jesus could do. All authority has been given to him, but this is not one of the things. So I thought about that, right? I've probably asked God about things that he can't do for me. That's not to say that God doesn't have the power. That's to say, I've asked for honor and I was humiliated. Jesus will say in Luke chapter 14, there's a wedding feast. He says, when you're invited to a wedding feast, don't go sit at the best place in the house. Lest the person who invited you says, hey, I saved that seat for somebody else. You go and you sit way over there away from me, is the idea. We've kind of seen that right before, where we exalted ourselves and we were looking for everyone to praise us, and instead what do we get? Humiliation. Or maybe we're like James and John in this case, where they're asking for something and it's kind of selfish. We're asking for selfish things and we were denied it. Man, wouldn't it be awesome to sit on the right hand on a nice chair in the throne? Or, man, if I can't sit on the right hand, I'll take the left hand. I'm still right next to him. But it's all for me. And it reminds me of what James says in James chapter 4. He says, you ask and you do not receive because you asked to use it and spend it on your pleasure. So many times that describes our prayer life, doesn't it? We're asking things from God for our pleasure. Not for anyone else's benefit. Not for us to use it to help others. But it's good for me. Sometimes it's okay to do that. Cast your cares upon Him because He cares for you. If you're worried about something, let God know about it. But understand that God may say, I can't do that for you. I don't have that. I can't do that for you. And so if you got to pick one of the sons, are you going to be the son of Timaeus, Bartimaeus, or are you going to be the son of Zebedee? I'm here to tell you that I think they're the same people. Notice this. What does the Lord want me to do? Let's say you want to be the greatest, right? Jesus flat out tells us what to do if you want to be the greatest. We just read that. You've got to serve. You want to be the greatest? You be the best servant in the world. Then you'll be the greatest. God will exalt you. Humble yourself and God will exalt you. We see that picture all in Philippians chapter 2. Jesus, He was obedient to the death of the cross. You know what God did? He gave Him a name that was above every name. That at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus is the Christ, the glory of God the Father. That's what happens when you humble yourself. You receive that honor. Let's say, okay, fine. I want my sight. I want to see Jesus. I would love to see Jesus. He's going around. I've heard all about Him. I want to see Him. I'm going to tell you it's the same thing. Look at John chapter 12. This is in the final week of Jesus that He's crucified. Verse 20, so it would be the feast of the Passover. Now among those who went up to worship at the feast were some Greeks. So these came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and asked, Sir, we wish to see Jesus. We want to see Him. We've heard about Him. We want to see Him. And Philip went and told his brother Andrew, and they went and told Jesus. And notice what Jesus says, 23. The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. And truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls in the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Whoever loves his life loses it. And whoever hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. And if anyone serves me, he must follow me. And where I am, there will be my servant also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. You see the similarities there? We wish to see Jesus. And Jesus doesn't say, okay, I'll come and I'll see him. Jesus says, if you want to see me, you got to lose your life. Just as he will die, like that wheat that's thrown, he will die. But he will come up out of the ground on the third day, and he will be the first fruit of all creation to rise from the dead. He says, if you want to be like me, you've got to lose yourself. You know what the Father will do when you lose yourself? You get eternal life. And you get honor from the Father. I don't need to be just like one of these. I don't need to be Bartimaeus, or I need to be the sons of Zebedee. I need to be both. I need to be servant. And it reminds me of, well, did they follow Jesus? The Lord wanted them to follow him. Remember what he said to James and John? You'll drink this cup. Are you able to drink it? And they said, yeah, we'll drink it. He said, yeah, you will. Remember who the first martyr is that died for Jesus? James, the son of Zebedee, in Acts chapter 12. He died for Jesus. You know what it says about our text, the last verse of chapter 20 of Matthew, about our blind man? Our blind men, you know what they did? They got up and they followed Jesus. We're going to follow Jesus and come to give our life for other people. Or are we going to come to Jesus and ask for these places of honor and expect him to be a cakewalk? Open your eyes of your heart and come to the Lord and let's go and see him. Be servants for him forever. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way this morning, we'd ask that you would come now and understand as we stand.